Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can all go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, interesting people pop in to rent something. We go through the films that they've loved across their life, and we are just here to help you figure out what you could be watching on streaming platforms and out in cinemas. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV? All right, top of the morning. How are you, Perrin?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good, man.
Good.
And hello, everyone. Welcome back to the video store. Thank you for choosing us. I hope you went out and voted yesterday. I hope you are looking down right now and seeing a little ink mark on your thumb for doing literally the one fucking thing you have to do in life.
Yeah.
When it comes to politics.
People fought for your right to vote. Come
and the world around you. Yeah. It's the one thing you can do. So I hope you did that, and I hope the rest of your day was great. Before we get underway, I just want to make a little announcement for all those browsing the store.
Attention all customers. This is to let you know that our friends over at Duos Wine are running a special little promotion with us. If you head on over to duos.wine and use the promo code Video Store Duos, you can get 15% off your order on all Duos wine, but you have to choose the pickup at the Bioscope. So you can save on shipping if you live in Joburg by choosing the pickup at the Bioscope. But there in the checkout, if you use Video Store Duos, you can get 15% off your wine. It's good wine in a box. That's duos.wine.
Today is our guest episode. So for those who don't know, every Tuesday we have an episode that's just behind the counter with us talking about what we're watching. It's a bit more focused on what we chatted about. That came out on Tuesday. This is our guest episode where an interesting chap is going to pop in to rent something. Did you ever watch We Will Rock You, Perrin? Do you go out to the theater at all?
No, my girlfriend loves the theater, so we go when we can. But I haven't seen We Will Rock You.
Yeah, so every now and again, there's a bigger production that takes over a place like Monte Cassino for a couple of months.
Teatro.
Shout out to Karuna, who was our guest a few episodes back, who is starring in Mamma Mia. But Richard is one of those performers, and I had the opportunity to have a good chat with him. I think for those who don't know him, I think it's really worth still listening because this is the magic of podcasting, is that we get to have this chat. There's a lot more to come out.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to chat about. And it, you know, the starting point is movies, but so much more comes out. So I think you're really going to enjoy this chat. And I think we should just get straight into it. Have you got something you can do? Can you organize a shelf, Perrin?
Sure. I'll organize a shelf.
What would be your favorite shelf to organize?
Oh, no.
Horror.
Yeah, let's do horror. Let's do the horror shelf.
You're going to organize the horror shelf. This is Richard popping in to rent something. How's it?
Hello. Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm so good. Today is a great day. I get to have the best conversation in the coolest video store in Johannesburg.
Thank you, man.
You're welcome.
You say you've listened to the show.
I have, yeah. I got onto it because of my mate. He was actually, he featured on your podcast when you were doing a bit at Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. So Waleed.
Yeah. So I listened because of Waleed. Obviously, he spoke super highly of your show. He's an avid fan.
Yeah.
And also, his mind is like an old cinema. He listens to, he consumes old movies, so he's the right customer for you.
He's a lovely dude, and of course you are the star of his indie film.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks.
Which we, at the time that this episode would come out, we would have already screened it.
Yeah.
As part of the Joburg Underground Presents Night, which is a lovely thing that we do at the Bioscope, which is a particular night specifically for those great, like, underground, very indie, very raw, very cool, very punk rock films.
Yeah.
And so when Waleed wanted to do a screening at the Bioscope, I thought, there's no better umbrella to do it first under than under the Joburg Underground.
Yeah.
Which is run in collaboration with Bill, who's a lovely dude. So you would have already been up on the Bioscope screen. But
yeah,
you...
I cannot wait. I mean, I know by the time that this airs, I was so excited, but no, I cannot wait. It's going to be incredible.
But you do an incredible amount with your time. You're also in musical theater.
Oh, listen, I've now taken on a whole bunch of roles, but yes, I previously worked in musical theater. I just finished touring with We Will Rock You. We did a world tour, which was great. I played one of the lead characters.
Yeah, you were Brick.
Brit. Yeah, it's a play on Britney Spears, because there's a joke in the show that says, I'm the roughest, toughest, most crazy rock and roller, because they adopt names from the past.
Yeah, no, it's a great show.
And then it drops and he's like, my name is Britney Spears. And then the whole audience roars, because obviously, he's not Britney Spears.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how Brit came about.
Cool. I watched it recently, the one that was in South Africa.
Yeah, that was the one I was in.
You were in that one. Brit is the, because there's the main dude.
That's Galileo.
It's Galileo. And then there's, who's the female?
Scaramouche.
Yes. And then you're one of the leaders of the revolution crew.
Yeah,
eh?
So I'm one of the leaders of the Bohemians.
The Bohemians.
I'm not the leader. I'm like the lead general that gets the job done.
But it's so cool.
Brit gets charged to find the dreamer who's going to bring back rock and roll.
It's such a cool play.
Yeah, it's cool.
And so you traveled the world with it.
Yeah. I mean,
where were some of the spots you went to?
We started in Manila, then we went to Singapore, Joburg, Cape Town. And then we finished off in Tel Aviv.
Wild.
Yeah.
Pretty Jesus, cool. What was the East like?
Pretty cool. I mean, like, listen, it was actually weird. We finished 2 weeks before all the happenings happened over there.
Which happenings?
The Gaza issue.
Oh, you mean in Tel Aviv?
Yeah, we were in Tel Aviv 2 weeks before.
Yeah, no, I was meaning, I want to get into that.
Oh, you're saying Southeast Asia?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I've been there a couple of times before. Manila was my second time. It was my fourth time to Singapore. I love the East, man. It's so different.
What kind of people are you performing to? Asian folk?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Asian folk.
Because it's all in English, right?
Yeah. Also, a lot of expats, which is really cool. But, I mean...
They get it all?
The East has such an incredible, like, culture around... the arts. It's amazing. Yeah. So they really do. They've got this incredible culture around it, and they support theater, which is something that, you know, we're struggling to really get into.
Yeah, well, listen, there's very various forms of the arts, but
well, sure.
I know that when I went to Monte Cassino to watch We Will Rock You, I was like, this will work.
Yeah.
Because we all know Queen.
Yeah.
We all know Monty. It's a lovely world-class huge production, and of course this is selling out.
Yeah, I mean, like, now currently Mamma Mia's on at
Teatro. I'm gonna go with my family.
It is so good. I went on opening night. The cast is incredible. Obviously it's ABBA.
Yeah.
So the music is fantastic. The local talent is out of this world in South Africa, and I think that's something that, you know, obviously I'm a huge theater supporter, so I celebrate everyone that's in the creative arts in South Africa.
Yeah, but the Sound of Music that was also recently on, the reports of it were that it really was world class.
Yeah.
And like, I just feel like we've been hearing that more now than before. I don't know whether I'm just more attuned to it, but it really feels like we're nailing it now.
Yeah.
Which is lovely. Not to say that we weren't before, but I think it's really just doing so well.
Well, I think, our industry is a little bit behind in terms of where the Americas and where the UK is. But our talent, when it comes to in front of the camera, behind the camera, on stage, off stage, is world class, which is why South Africans tour the world in these incredible shows.
Often they're the ones that do a lot of the touring. Do perhaps some of the other groups don't necessarily tour as extensively worldwide? Would there be like an American group that would just do America, or the UK would just do UK?
Yeah.
Where the South Africans are the ones that tend to go to Manila.
It's generally how it works. So there'll be American tours, and obviously because the Americans work in America, they'll do those tours. There's a UK tour, which obviously the UK-based artists will do. But most of the international tours are South African performers and South African crews.
Yeah.
So we do the Middle East. We obviously do Asia. And I've also done a show that's taken me to, I've actually done two shows in New Zealand.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's lovely, man.
Yeah, super cool.
And okay, so there was obviously musicals was a big part, and I think that's a completely different muscle, right? That's like an endurance thing.
Well, I mean, you've got to sing, dance, and act all at the same time. But not just once. No, 8 shows a week.
8 fucking shows a week.
Yeah, I was doing
what
Joseph.
What is that physical endurance for you?
No, it's no. Are we allowed to swear?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, good. It's fucking crazy. I mean, I went to university for it, which was wild. Musical theater college is crazy.
Where did you go?
I was at TUT in Pretoria.
Okay.
This is what a normal day for me started as. 4 o'clock wake up to train, personal training from 5 until 6. Then 6 until 8, we'd have directing projects. So most of the students are creating projects. Then from 8 until 12 is normal class. We have an hour break. Then from 1 until 5 is normal classes. From 5:30 to about 7:30 is directing projects. Then 7:30 to 10:30 is rehearsing for the show. Rinse and repeat. 3 years of that.
Wow.
So it's crazy. I had burnout 4 times, which is crazy. I put myself in hospital because the workload is out of this world.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I guess I kept that up in my professional career. But yeah, I mean,
you've got an understudy if you like fall sick.
Two understudies, yeah.
And have you had to, in some of these moments recently, bow out for a day or two?
Absolutely not. I am a madman. I love what I do.
But some things could be out of your control, right? If you just get sick.
Well, listen, I mean, there was a when we were doing the show here at Monte Cassino, I got gastro. I had gastro for 10 days. Yeah. 10 days solid. I wasn't able to eat. It was out of, and I still went on.
Well, because I don't know whether you've ever seen it, but it's actually a very interesting little document, which was this quite early on official documentary of Justin Bieber. He's still like sort of 16, 17 at this point. But there's this interesting moment where his vocal coach says, you've got to cancel this one show. But he's like, but I'm fine. I can talk. I can sing. But they're like, no, you don't understand. You got to cancel this one show so that you can do the next 10.
Correct.
You know, so sometimes it's got to be the strategic bow out.
Yeah, I mean, like, there is a difference between those kinds of performers and musical theater performers because we're trained to do it 8 shows a week.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of the pop stars, they have incredible training, but they don't have the resilience and the training to sustain them for 8 shows a week.
And each time, I mean, I perform in a band as well, so I know that we can perform the same songs over and over again. But I mean, where are the joys for you? Like, why... why do you enjoy it? Or do you still enjoy it?
Listen, I mean, my career has taken a huge turn, and I think that's why I'm in the video store today, is because I shot my first film in 2018, and since then, my second one was in 2021, and after number 2, I'm now shooting number 14 next month.
Yeah. Waleed said that you've been doing so many.
Wild. So yeah, in the last 3 years, I've shot 13 feature films, and I've shot a local TV series. I was on 100 episodes on Legacy, and I've just shot an Amazon Prime TV show.
Okay.
Yeah, which is coming out in June.
Okay, but in that answer, are you wanting to segue out of musical theater?
Well, I mean, listen, I think my life is segueing out of musical theater. It's just obviously because of how difficult it is. There's only so much that your body can handle.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, there are some soccer players that can play up until 45. I mean, like Fernando Alonso, he can drive a Formula One car in his 40s.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'm Alonso.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I mean, I've enjoyed my time.
But you can always pull a Craig O'Barney and come back for certain roles, right?
No.
Like the captain. And
so I'm working with Craig now on this film at the end of the month. And Craig is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, man. He has so much energy just for all of it. And he's so keen and he's incredible at it.
Yeah.
So I mean, listen, I'd love to grow and become a Craig O'Barney, but they're once in a generation, man. And I don't think that's me.
Okay. All right. So the plan is to currently do more film.
Yeah. I want to live, breathe, eat, digest film.
And how does that change? Obviously it's smaller, it's less physical. I mean, you could probably do film, like musical adaptations of like films that are musical adaptations.
I mean, that would be great. Okay. Yeah, I wish the world would be creating more movie musicals.
All right. So what we do is we've got this little journey because I want to get a sense of you because we're meeting each other for the first time. We like to go through the films that you've loved across your life.
Okay.
Where did we grow up?
Born and raised in Johannesburg. Been here my whole life.
Okay. Where was primary school?
I went to Cliffview Primary.
Cliffview.
It's
what
just
cliffs
off,
do we have views of
just
in Joburg?
14th Avenue. Just off 14th
that?
Avenue. It's in an area called Fairland.
Oh, okay.
And it's right next to Northcliff.
Okay. So we were looking over the Northcliff cliff. What were some of the films that came to you when you were young that sort of left an impact?
Oh man.
We've got the Puppy Love film, which is that first film that you loved.
I feel like I've got a couple of them because I've got this,
it can be a couple.
I've got this weird, interesting relationship when it comes to film, and I think that's why I was always drawn to film. So sorry to get so deep, and you know, I hope your listeners enjoy this.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, we went through a really traumatic event. So we lost my mom when I was 10 in a car accident, honestly, I truly believe this, that film saved my life. Okay. Because I had this idea in my head when I was a kid. Obviously, I didn't know any better back then. That there was a real place called Movie Land where people lived, that there were magically cameras floating around capturing their story, and it always worked out for them.
Okay.
Always did.
You had this sense as a kid.
I don't know why. I mean, obviously I was that generation where, you know, we still had open time, right?
Yeah.
We were in, you know. So I honestly thought, I didn't know how films got made. I just knew that they were magically there on this magical box.
Okay.
And I was like, these people are amazing and their story always works out. And I think that really helped me cope with the loss because it was super traumatic. It was a family holiday and we had a car accident.
You were in the car.
Yeah. My brothers, myself, my two brothers, my dad, and obviously my mom, and my mom didn't make it.
Was she the only one that didn't make it?
The only one.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was rough. It was an awful day. So that's why I think film really saved my life. Musicals were cool, man.
But how so do you say that film specifically saved your life?
Because that Movie Land idea that I had, that it always worked out for those people. I had it in my head that maybe one day I could move there and that maybe one day my story would also work out.
Okay.
Because at the time it was super hard. I was really struggling. I was 10 years old at the time.
10's a difficult age to rationalize it all.
Didn't have anyone to really speak to. None of my friends really understood that kind of trauma. So I was dubbed this old soul because I would try and communicate with people slightly older that would understand and just never really found my footing with it. I never really found my place in like with my peers.
Yeah, because so, I would imagine that yeah, really grappling with mortality at that age would be very maturing.
I mean, you know, Waleed and I were just chatting about it now, and I think one of the things that he keeps asking me is like, where does all this energy come from? And I've been thinking about it for the longest time, and I said to him, I was like, I think it's because I saw death so viscerally at such a young age. I could see that it could just be taken away so easily. So
it's very interesting,
which is one of the things that I only realized later with a little bit of maturity that I'm just like, oh, maybe I just find this energy from somewhere because it truly is a gift to breathe.
Yeah.
I know that's super depressing, but
no,
you know,
it's the opposite of depressing.
Well, yeah.
It's a reminder of the optimism of life. Right?
Yeah. I mean, that's also one of the reasons why I've put myself in hospital 7 times with burnout, because being alive is much better than the opposite. I can promise you, I've seen it. Obviously we're talking film and all of that, and film talks about a lot of these issues, but to see it in front of you so viscerally, the color skin goes when there's no life in it. Is that'll
Jesus
change a
Christ.
Person.
This got yeah.
Well, hence the reason.
Brain, yeah.
Hence the reason why I usually get cast as these crazy roles.
Yeah.
I mean, my first film, I played a woman trafficker, which was awful. I mean, great film, but awful
which
to play.
Which one was that?
It's called Aya.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah,
it was on Showmax for a while. Then I did Nundi, also by the same director, writer director, and then I played a meth addict living on the street in that film.
Jesus.
So like maybe it's
maybe they're
seeing right through my eyes into my soul and say, wow, you've had heartache. Let's channel that to tell these terribly difficult stories.
Sure. Any particular happy endings that stand out for you in terms of films themselves? The film land.
I think this is going to expose me. But my favorite film for the longest time was How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. I know this sounds stupid.
No, that's
but
lovely.
I imagined that, oh man, if I could be Matthew McConaughey and Kate Hudson fell for me. Ah, wouldn't what a life that would be. I have my motorbike and all of this would be so good.
That might have been more the high school film for you. When do you think that came to you?
Yeah, I think that was more like late primary school. I was quite young.
Okay.
But
I forget our ages. How old are you now?
I'm now 35.
35. Yeah. Okay, I'm a little bit past you. Okay, so that could have come in primary school.
Mm.
But yeah, the happy ending, the comfort blanket, the film land, that almost like sort of Barbie land, right?
Yeah, obviously, I mean, for me, growing up with Disney, the golden age of Disney, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
That was extraordinary.
Yeah.
No, they should really stop with all the remakes. I hope you do not stock the remakes in your video store.
No, we don't.
No offense to all the creators that worked on those.
Watching the live action, and I put it in inverted commas, Lion King, just has you realize how perfect the first one was.
Yeah, but they had the formula. Could they have not just recreated it exactly the same for the new generation? It would have been...
But they didn't even need to. That's the thing, is that it was perfect. Why don't we tell other stories?
Yeah.
But, okay. Over into high school, where were we there? Where did we go to high school?
I went to Northcliffe High.
Okay. Yeah. Good old Northcliffe.
Yeah.
Crazy. Would you have been anywhere near Jonathan Rocksmith?
Jonathan was 2 years above me.
Okay.
Yeah, he was actually the one that introduced me to musical theater.
I would imagine, because he's obviously a huge part of it in South Africa.
I mean, he's incredible. So yeah, I went to high school at the same time as him. He's in the same year as my middle brother. And I remember it so clearly. I was too afraid to audition for the musical in grade 8 because of bullying. Yes, there was bullying back then.
That's never going to disappear.
No, and especially when you choose something creative, you know, you're weird and you're out there. So people don't really dig that. So missed the chance in grade 8 because I'd seen a musical that Jonathan did when I was in grade 7. He did The Mikado.
Yeah.
And he was amazing in it.
We did that at Bryanston. I was at Bryanston High. And we also did the Hot Mikado or the Mikado.
So, yeah, the Hot Mikado is the jazz version.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, they're two different plays.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Same idea.
Same story, just different music.
Okay.
So I saw that when I was in grade 7. And then I got really excited about going there for high school, and I was way too shy and too scared when it came to actually auditioning because I'd never sung.
Yeah.
I was the fat kid growing up because I was dealing with, you know, early onset trauma and all of that nonsense.
Oh, were you a bit tubby?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I started eating my feelings until I got bullied enough to lose all the weight.
Okay. Yeah. Was that in high school?
No, primary school.
In primary school you shed the weight?
No, in primary school I put it on after my mom passed away. Yeah. And then I got really bullied quite badly. And then I just, I like to call it, I went on a fasting experience that I just didn't eat for a couple of months, really.
Wild.
Yeah.
Jesus, that probably wasn't too healthy either.
No, it wasn't healthy for my body nor for my mental health. But anyways, I mean, I got a little bit skinnier and that got me a little bit of attention, which was weird. Because I also started putting two and two together that I was like, oh, wow, because I look different, you're going to treat me differently? The world sucks.
Yeah,
kids are shit. Just,
yeah.
So anyways, back to high school.
So slightly tubby, don't quite know you can sing.
No.
Wanting to find the courage
I wanted to be a Backstreet Boy when I was younger because I thought they were super cool. So when I got to grade 9, we were doing Pirates of Penzance at our school.
Mm-hmm.
And Jonathan was playing the lead. He was playing Pirate King. He was incredible at it, even back then.
You can sort of see the stars.
He was like 16 years old and just a superstar.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he was trying to find boys because not enough boys had auditioned. And my brother actually said to him, he's like, oh yeah, as a joke, you should go talk to my brother. He likes all that singing stuff. True as nuts, Jonathan came and found me on the field at break and said, hey, I spoke to your brother. Are you interested in any of this? And if you are, come to the rehearsal on Friday, check it out, and if you like it, stay.
I'm going to find you instead of you finding me.
Which was amazing, and I got in. I did that show. I did, when I was in grade 9, I did grade 10. I skipped grade 11 because I played first team rugby, And then I did... Okay,
was some of that puppy fat working its way into muscle by that point?
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, puberty. That helped a lot. Yeah, so so we slimmed down a little bit.
Because you're a well-built, strong guy now. Oh, I mean, thanks, man. Just to paint the picture.
Well, I mean, listen, I mean, I've been touring with musicals for the last 12 years, so that keeps me skinny.
It's a little bit like... doing a garden service. Don't ever hire a fat gardener.
No, because they're not going to do a good job. But now,
so for you as a musical theater person, of course you're in great shape.
Well, I mean, I try. I'm trying to keep up with a 20-year-old, which is absolutely, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
But now I do CrossFit every day because for my sins. I obviously like abuse.
Yeah, sure.
I really do CrossFit.
For you. It's healthy.
Listen, when a role comes along and they say, "Hey, you're gonna do this action role," I want to be able to fucking run.
Yeah, sure.
I want to be able to, you know, take a punch.
And you say you're growing your hair now for a role.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm shooting a film at the end of the month. We're shooting it down in Durban on location in Zululand. It's gonna be cool.
Okay.
I'm playing a rhino horn smuggler, but I'm a pilot.
Always the bad guy. Eh?
Ah, no, it's cool. He's actually the good guy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, good smuggler.
Yeah. Yeah, no, so he finds himself in a really, like, tricky situation that he's trying to get out of.
Okay.
And then there's a series of murders where he works, and then he's like, "No, oh, you know, I've got to save everyone." So he actually is the good guy.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, who's directing?
Daryl Ruud.
Oh.
Yeah, I met him on Monday. It was really cool.
Oh, it'd be lovely to pick a guy like that's brain.
Yeah, listen, he was good fun.
He's done so much. Eh?
Yeah, he's also quick-witted, which is really cool.
That rhino trade is a very interesting one. Very close person in my life. Effectively sister-in-law, to become sister-in-law. They moved into a house and... all of a sudden, they had like sort of the hawks arrive.
What?
And she was like, "What is going on?" And they sort of revealed the fact that in their house before them was this rhino smuggler, and they wanted to check whether there were horns like in the walls and you know, because these people smuggle this stuff in all the strangest places.
What?
It's wild.
Honestly.
And also just when you also backtrack the industry and you're like, wait. This is because people think that the horns give them something.
Yes.
You know, like sexual virility or whatever the term is. But it's like, really? All of this just for that?
Real life is
and so
far
many
stranger
people
than fiction.
That it's caused an extinction.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, there's always kooky people that'll smoke something or do something.
Weird.
But it just shows you the extent of that.
Yeah.
Fuck it. Wow.
Yeah, but I'm really excited
to
do it.
But that's cool.
Anyways,
all right, so in a month's time. You're into that?
No, Sunday. I leave. Yeah.
Oh, geez, we caught you just in time.
Yeah, thankfully. Listen, we do the screening on Saturday, and then Sunday I fly out.
Okay.
Yeah, it's cool, man.
That's exciting, man.
Yeah, 3 weeks on set. I think it's going to be like
That's amazing. Okay, but in our high school, you've met Jonathan.
Yeah.
You're starting to find theater perhaps as a safe space.
Well, yeah. I mean, I get to
initially,
play.
Initially, it wasn't. Well, initially you didn't think it was going to be that space.
I just thought the fat kid doesn't really belong in theater.
Yeah.
So anyways, I just find it a lot of fun because I lost a little bit of the weight and I was playing a different character. It was far easier to be someone else than it was, you know, to live my existence at that time.
I get that. I very much get that.
It's not, that's also the thing is like, even after the incident, life was just tough in my head because...
You made it tough.
I don't know if I made it tough or if the trauma really made it tough, but also discovering in the last 2 years that I'm most definitely ADHD.
In these last 2 years?
Yeah. Oh, discovering your ADHD in your 30s is a wild trip, man.
That's usually diagnosed like in the school time. Yeah.
Wild. No, fucking crazy.
And you go, okay, maybe this explains a lot.
And you know, it happened in the most nonchalant way. So one of my friends that was on this tour with me, this last one that we did, We Will Rock You, she's been diagnosed with ADHD. And we were laughing, talking shit before the first, like before our show. And we're like, ha, 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 ha. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm probably ADHD. She turns and looks at me, deadpan. She's like, "Yeah,
yeah."
So I was like, "What do you?
What does that mean?
What do you mean?
Yeah.
Why are you so certain?" She's like, "No, 100%.
Okay.
Here are all the markers. Bang, 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 bang. Go get it checked out." And true as nuts, I fell into a depression. I was like, "My brain is broken."
No, it's not that broken.
Well, it kind of is. It doesn't work like a normal brain, so my brain is broken. And then I started figuring it out that I was like, oh, you know, I started consuming a lot of lot of videos on the internet because obviously because of my ADHD, I dive straight into education and all that shit.
I was about to say, just help me for a sec, because we think ADHD is the fact that you would flip between things, right?
Not necessarily. There's so many different versions of ADHD.
But one version in particular is like, if you get into something, you fucking get into it.
Yeah. I mean, like, because it's...
What is it for you?
Because it's a spectrum. I think mine is just... Oh, I think mine is one, has hyperactivity. I struggle to sit still. So my brain is always working.
With all due respect,
working.
I've watched you move constantly while we're talking now. So that makes some sense.
Yeah. I like to feel the space that I'm inhabiting. And obviously I have issues with
it's
things
totally
around
fine,
me.
Man. No,
I keep bumping the mic.
No. It's not a problem.
But yeah, like this is also one of the reasons why musical theater worked for me is because
that's where the energy comes.
Physical and it's larger than life and you know,
being
all of that.
Big. It's you don't have to withhold.
No, but also like, you know, now that I'm getting a little bit older and I just don't give a shit anymore. Like, you know, if you enjoy what's happening here, then be my friend here. If you don't, then go over there and be happy over there. Either way, I'm fine with it. As long as you're happy.
Okay.
As long as, you know, we can coexist, that's fine. But we don't have to be mates.
Okay, sure. And but that's just a maturity thing.
100%.
That's not an ADHD thing.
But I mean, also because I'm super animated and I, you know, I talk with my hands. I'm basically Italian with the way that I use my hands.
Si.
Si. That's not Italian, though. Is that more?
Yeah, si.
I think that's Spanish.
Si. Whatever. The Italians also say,
I trust you.
But have you ever seen those videos of those like little kids, those little Italian kids, and how
so
they
cool.
start talking to their parents?
Yeah,
and they how they like rationalize.
So crazy.
They're speaking with their hands, and you can see kids are little sponges. Yeah.
No, it's super cool. So then, just to get back to high school.
Yeah.
Then in my matric year, I was playing first team rugby. And then that was also like the year after High School Musical came out.
Okay.
So yes, of course the rugby guys were chirping me, oh, you're fucking Zac Efron, oh, you're so gay and this and that. And I was like, dude, shut up, man.
I was about to say, did first team rugby give you any cool points?
No, none at all. So
you do have a Zac Efron look to you.
Thanks, man. That's also another story for another day.
Take that as a compliment.
Oh, thanks. Thanks.
Okay, but it didn't translate into too many cool.
So
points.
the drama kids didn't dig me because I played rugby because all the rugby jocks were fucking dickheads.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the rugby guys didn't like me because I was obviously gay because I sang and
you
danced
had to
in
have
a
been
musical.
Gay. Yeah, yeah.
Has to, right?
And of course, you want to explain to all these people in all these moments, like, there's nothing wrong with being gay.
There is nothing wrong with it. And so what
why,
if my sexual
so why
orientation
is
that way?
Thing, yeah.
Like, I don't give a shit. But the problem was because back then, you know, so many of the boys.
This is the turn of the millennium, right?
They were figuring themselves out and they didn't know how to process their own information. So they projected it onto everyone. And it was. So no wonder we have this thing called toxic masculinity because, you know, we. Like,
yeah,
that's why we talk about mental health is because how the fuck are we supposed to process all this information?
Yeah.
Where now, you know, like it's slightly different. You know, I'm not saying that everyone has jumped on board,
but it's slightly better. You've got representation
and
you've got examples and the discussions are happening all the time, even in a place like this.
100%,
man. Talking about
people should just be who the fuck they want to be.
Yeah.
And I don't give a, you know, I've always, you know, signed up to this newsletter. I don't give a fuck who you sleep with.
Yeah.
I really don't. And as long as you're not a dickhead.
One of the nicest things in my formative years was being at Varsity, being good friends with a guy who was seeing women when we first started Varsity. And then at one point he sort of said, my boyfriend. And I was like, oh,
good
really?
For you. Yeah.
And it was the first time in my life that I had been very close with someone who was now gay. And I was like, I was just curious. I was like, what's going on? What's happening? What is this?
No, this is the flavor I did.
Explain this to me. And he put it so well, and it was so nice that this was my first introduction to the idea. He just said, I just love people.
I love
and
that.
I was like, oh
yeah, good
I
for
love
you.
That.
Good for you.
The fact that he's never been with a girl since, you know, is perhaps to suggest that perhaps he's not bisexual. Yeah. But I was like, I What a nice introduction to it.
I love that.
And it's great. And so that's what a lovely, you know, liberal arts degree can give you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, just that empathy of like how it works and the subtlety of it all and the nuance of life where it's not just like, oh, that's gay.
Yeah. Who cares? When was that a bad thing ever?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Any high school films stick out?
Wow.
What just made you laugh?
No, just like, man, I guess obviously you can tell I'm a huge romantic.
Yeah.
So I remember it just popped into my head. My first team prop, right? Yeah. We were mates. His name was Jason. He came over to my house one day. And, you know, obviously.
Oh, prop. Rugby
first
position.
Team rugby prop, right? Okay. So not a prop that I used in a play or whatever. So, no, my first team rugby prop. He came over and he was, you know, just coming to have a sleepover, whatever. And he was like, yeah, you know, like, what film are we going to watch?
What did you make him watch?
We watched The Notebook.
Lovely.
No, my mom joined. My mom joined us. But two 18-year-olds, like, playing first-team rugby, like, going for Craven Week trials and sobbing.
Lovely.
Sobbing by the end of this film because...
Both of you being allowed to cry.
Absolutely. Frot, snot and trana. Yeah. And we're just sitting there, and I just thought, what a great moment. Yes, we loved all the action films growing up.
Yeah.
You know, Die Hard was one of my favorites. I love Bruce Willis. And, you know, a lot of those, I like that rough, tough, and spiteful, but there was something about those rom-coms that just allowed a masculine human, this archetype that I had imagined, to just be vulnerable, even if it's to one person.
Yeah.
And I love that idea because I was like, that's a real fucking man over there. Because he can be rough, tough, and spiteful when he needs to, but he can also be soft and sensitive when he needs to. Yeah. And I'm like, that really hit true for me because I didn't fit into any brackets. I wasn't macho enough to be a rugby guy.
Yeah, and then I was very similar.
I wasn't, you know, flamboyant and artsy enough for the arts kids. And I always had this dichotomy that I was living between, this juxtaposition type of life.
Yeah, and all you wish for, and so perhaps my high school career was, I had the sort of positiveness of that, being able to fit amongst all crowds.
That's cool.
And I'm sorry for you that you didn't.
So fine.
Yeah, I mean, as we said, we've grown from it, but. Yeah, thankfully I was able to be friends with the guys that were the rugby players and I was able to do the school plays.
Yeah, but that's because you're cool, man. No. I can even just tell by the way you're sitting here.
No, man.
Just chilling. Like, you know, you've got a brain on you. Yeah. Like,
no,
you know,
no.
I wouldn't imagine that, you know, you're actively going out and looking for shit.
No, sure. But I mean, I'm sorry for you that you had to start from the position that you had to. It's made you who you are.
Yeah.
Okay,
we'll blame the ADHD.
I love this notebook moment.
No, it's crazy. That's why I laughed. So,
what do you want?
I mean, like, one of the first movies that I remember going to the cinema to watch.
It's complicated.
Yeah. What do you want? I love that. So,
Speaking of which, can I just interject to say that Gosling in The Fall Guy.
I love him, man.
It's so good. Yeah, and let me tell you, he is so good in The Fall Guy.
I dig him.
Sorry, carry on. What were you going
to
say?
One of the films that I remember going to watch at the cinema, I must have been like 12 years old, and my middle brother decided he wanted to go watch The Ring. I have never been so shit scared in my life. I was 12.
You must have been underage for it.
100%. But also, I have two older brothers who thought it was really cool to fuck with my life.
Yeah.
So one,
that film is usually brought to you by someone older.
When I was like, I think it was like, I was like 7 or 8, my oldest brother, he's now 4 years older than me. He said, sit down, we're going to watch Beetlejuice.
Okay.
I honestly, like.
Too much.
No. I ran out of the room a couple of times. Yeah. I thought the character of Beetlejuice was coming for me. My lips were steeled. I was like, no. Same thing happened with The Ring. I sprinted out of the cinema because she was going to come out of the screen.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, Ring is a lot. Beetlejuice at least had some charisma and fun.
Yeah, sure.
To
but
it.
Like for an 8-year-old kid, I was shitting
Do
in my
know
pants.
That the second Beetlejuice is going to come out.
I saw the trailer. I cannot wait.
And it's cool. Keaton's, it's going to be called Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice.
It's so cool. Yeah, because what you said one more time and you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Whoa, no. No, I still have nightmares about that.
Lovely.
I had such a diverse offering of films growing up because I've got two older brothers who enjoy very different styles of entertainment. So I was really lucky. I was brought up on it all.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
Okay, then we know we go to TUT. We do musical theater specifically.
Yeah.
And do we find our click at this point? Do we feel comfy?
Somewhat. I mean, you know, we've
shed a little bit of puppy fat.
I was a straight guy working in a you know, a very flamboyant world. So
sure, but that's where all the chicks are.
That's why I did it. So I did Craven Week trials when I was 16, and I was like, yo, that's cool, man. I played for Northern Gauteng. It was great. And then at the end of matric, I was like, this is stupid, man. Why do these guys want to hurt me?
Yeah,
then
I had a very similar rugby experience. I took like, I play in a rock band. What the fuck am I doing on a rugby field? Noise.
And then I took a gap year, and I went to like my first ballet class, open ballet class at SABT.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, ballerinas wear such tight clothes.
Yeah.
And they do this.
They're gorgeous.
Like, just because they can. And I was like, what the hell? And I remember,
but if you're
like,
straight amongst a flock of ballerinas,
you're gonna get me into trouble. Yeah,
you could make a good case for yourself. There's that amazing bit of Robin Williams's comedy when he talks about going to Juilliard and how he was surrounded by these ballerinas, and he goes, and it's so funny. Mm-hmm. He goes, you just want to say to them, "I'm sorry, but you're just the most beautiful person." Oh, fuck off.
Yeah,
they just dismiss him.
So I took a gap year just before I went to TUT because I guess I had to try and convince my dad that studying the arts would be a good idea because my dad's an accountant and has worked in finance acquisition his entire life.
Okay.
So that was tricky. But I'd worked in children's theater that year and I was like, no, this is, do you know what?
But you were acting in your gap year.
I did a show at the children's theater. I did a TV show that was the worldwide debut of streaming in any shape, way, shape, or form.
Okay.
So we were streaming to like Nokia phones in 2010.
Oh.
No, it was a worldwide premiere. It was crazy.
New innovation. Yeah.
I was terrible in it, but it was really cool. It was great. So I did that. And then in that gap year, I was like, no, man. Because my dad was like, oh, no, don't you want to go to RAU? Back then it was RAU, UJ.
Yeah.
He's like, don't you want to go play rugby? And I was like, Dad, no, let me explain this to you. I've been to ballet classes. These girls wear tight-fitting clothes.
Yeah.
I look semi-strong, so the ballet mistress said, I can be in ballet class if I lift them.
Yeah.
Are you joking with me? You want me to go grab sweaty balls and get tackled by men that want to kill me? Or I can go to a ballet class and I can go and lift hot girls. Ah, Dad, I don't know.
You're going to have to,
Oh, I don't know. And they smell pretty.
Yeah,
you know?
as opposed to the others that you have to pick up in a lineup.
No, exactly. But I mean, I was a backline player, so at least I didn't have to get that involved.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, man. One, these girls are gorgeous. Two, they're so talented.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, man, no. This seems right to me. So then convinced my dad at the end of my gap year to go to TUT, spent 3 years there, got my national diploma. That's really working out well for me now. I should have got a business degree.
I've
had a great time, and now I'm learning the process of skill stacking. I'm obviously reading way too much, thanks ADHD, so there's been one good thing that's come out of it.
But then
spent 3 years there, had never really danced before then.
Okay, so that's not a degree, that's a diploma.
No, I could have stayed for my degree.
Okay.
But I wanted to work.
Yeah,
so
cool.
The only reason
an actor doesn't need a degree.
Yeah, but the only reason that I would have wanted my degree is if I wanted to teach. So I didn't really want to teach at that point, and I wanted to get on the road, and I wanted to go and start working. So, took my real first dance classes at university. I started dancing at 20 because I played rugby.
Yeah.
Well, that was great. No, I was shocking. I was absolutely shocking. But anyways, worked my ass off, tore my hamstrings a couple of times, and got into the dance productions, and then got into the theater productions, the musicals that we did at university.
Mm.
Then booked my first dance production in university, my first professional one that came up after that, and then got into my first musical as well within the first 2 months.
It's lovely, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah,
but then
you booked. That's the most important thing.
Which is really cool. No.
It's literally the most important thing. You you hear, you know, you grow up and you think of all the romance of what it means to be in the arts, and then there's this moment where you realize the subtlety and the hard work and those kinds of things, and then you really appreciate the people that just keep working.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you can't always keep special. We're not always doing things that maybe are going to be household names or things, but you're working and you realize like there's something so incredible to that.
Yeah, listen, I think I got to the point really quickly that I was like, I don't give a shit if I'm super famous or not.
It's not about that. What's really cool is you're doing the work.
Yeah, it's that you're creating something and you're sharing it with others. I think that's really beautiful because you're literally creating something from nothing.
Yeah.
And I think that's really special.
Yeah. In the Varsity era, any films that or film moments that stick out?
Oh.
Because that's the time where you sometimes watch the weird stuff. You know, the expanding stuff. And of course, that's what Varsity's meant to do, where they, in certain classes, they show you some things that you wouldn't have normally seeked out.
Well, I mean, listen, I went to musical theater college, so we saw a lot of movie musicals.
Yeah.
So anything that I consumed was just in my own capacity. But funny thing, I mean, just about that, I always knew I wanted to work in film and television because of Movie Land.
Yeah.
But I also had the foresight back then to say, okay, I cannot specialize.
Yes.
So I went to musical theater college to learn how to sing, dance, and act. And because I knew I wanted to be diverse, that I could work in multiple different industries and disciplines, and that I would eventually make my way back to film and television.
Yeah.
Because that TV show that I shot in my gap year, oh man, I was hooked. It was a small budget. Yeah. We shot on, you know,
Is this the one that streamed to Nokia phone?
That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, rubbish. But I was hooked. I loved being on set. I loved what the product was at that time. And I was like, oh my gosh, if I can do this for the rest of my life, I'm happy.
Okay.
So I didn't get the film training back, you know, from like a tertiary institution. But I was just so in love with it that when YouTube started to really become an educational platform, I just consumed as much as I could.
Lovely.
Yeah, which is now leading us, Waleed and I are now going into our next indie production. And it's a film that I wrote, which is great.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, we're making a comedy.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's good. And people also realize how difficult a comedy is to make.
You know
it's
what?
One thing to be comical, but sure.
Yeah,
to
but
get
I just,
that on film is...
So
it's a lovely challenge.
Yeah, during lockdown, I started watching Eurovision, right? So I'm a huge Will Ferrell fan.
Oh, the comedy.
I think he's just so silly.
Yeah.
And that makes me so happy. So I watched that film. I think I've seen it like 15 times now.
Yeah, lovely.
It's so crazy. And then I sat there at one point and I started making a beat sheet for myself. What was actually happening in the story, how the lead was, you know, how his narrative was being driven and this and that. And then I used that beat sheet to write my film.
Okay.
Because I wanted it to...
You wanted to follow a similar rhythm.
Yeah. I wanted it to follow the comedic rhythms and beats that Will Ferrell had perfected. And I didn't know how to do that. So they say steal like an artist. So I did is I went and learned from him. I used that beat sheet to create my own that was flavored with a lot of his comedy, but now is very much a South African story, which is really cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is a beat sheet? Like, what would those lines be of the beat sheet?
Oh, literally, like I'd say scene one, children establishing narrative, saying what their dream goal is, because that's the hook, right?
Yeah.
So I'd write their hook.
Okay.
This is what they need. This is the promise that they're making at the beginning of the film that we need to see if they make it at the end. Because otherwise, you're not going to stay and watch the film. So I stole that from there. And I was like, oh, wow, they use this in social media. Hook, retain, reward. Oh, okay, that's actually from film. That's great. And then I read a book most recently by Donald Miller called Building a Story Brand.
Yeah.
And literally, he teaches marketing by everything that he learned from his film friends about how to tell a good story.
So much of that is so much of that is the gets translated. I mean, there's a lovely episode we did with Mandla Dube, who made Heart of the Hunter, and there's this moment where he says, there's a reason, there's a way in which we tell stories where we go, yo,
100%.
You know, and you, so you,
you will never believe this.
Yes.
Oh, there's the hook.
You set the expectation up. Yeah. Then the story comes, then there's the reveal. And that can be the same thing over 2 hours in a movie.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Okay, so I think
understanding
that's so cool.
Those beats. Yeah.
So listen, I don't think I'm a writer, but I think part of the creative journey is discovering new ways to have a voice. So I've been super lucky. I've been on stages in musicals all over the world. I've done local plays and local musicals, and now local films, local series, now international series and international films.
It's great, man.
So it's really cool taking a step back and saying, well, yeah, well, I wrote this one, so let's see what it can become on someone else.
Give it a whirl, man.
Which is really cool. I think that's great. That's cool. It's also a way to give back to the community that has also given us so much.
Yeah, and some of these things only come with time, you know? So only in your late 30s do you feel like you now have the space to write, you know, after having built up lots of experience.
I've got a lot of experience that is going to die on my hard drive. I hope no one ever reads it because it was stuff that I wrote when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was very poignant and topical back then, but now I'm just like, what is this nonsense?
Yeah, no, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, our last film, to perhaps close things off, is a film that you could settle down with, a film that you could marry, one of your sort of all times. It could be a film that you've mentioned before. It could be one that's kind of hit you recently. Is there one that you can think that could be an all-time favorite?
Oh, man, I have many. But sure. the one that popped into my head, only the first three are my favorite.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the last one, I think the Wachowski sister lost her mind.
Okay, The Matrix.
But The Matrix, man. Yeah. There was just something about that film that was super relevant in my life at that time. You know, obviously growing up and seeing this adversity that the Neo character goes through, learning that it's, you know, what do they call that? Is it an anagram? Neo is an anagram for one.
Yeah.
So you almost knew he was the one before he was the one, which is crazy. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then obviously with all the modern advances in filmmaking and all of that, and obviously just, man,
just
I want
a great story.
I want to grow up to be Keanu Reeves, and I want to be Keanu Reeves' friend.
Yeah.
He's just like the coolest dude. So I was like, if this is possible,
yeah,
and I could achieve anything close to this, that would be a good life.
Yeah.
So The Matrix, I've visited those three films specifically.
Yeah.
Oh man, also
they get a bit complicated and muddled near the end. But I mean, that first
so
one,
does life, man. Sure. Which I love that about the films. You're just like, what the fuck is happening? And you're like, yeah, it's one of those. It's the ebb and flow of life, which they're also trying to figure it out, which I thought was really cool.
But also just not, you know, there was an interesting reveal at the end, which is not that it's this big, crazy, singular story that, you know, he's one of many, and he's the next one, and he's the current one, and there'll be more. And
yeah,
it's like that's also, there's something a bit nihilistic about that.
Yeah, but also I just love how it challenged the entire world. People still think we're in the Matrix.
Yeah.
Which I think is great, man.
Yeah, this kind of simulation thing.
A film had that kind of power over the zeitgeist that you actually think, oh, maybe shit, we could be in the Matrix. Like, who is the architect? And, you know, a lot of religious people will say, well, you're calling the architect the wrong name.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay, well, that's cool.
Yeah.
But it's just to have that kind of influence over
a
generation it's the coolest thing. So I still go back and watch
it. There's also something really cool about the fact that the Matrix, the first one, you know, it was the full stop on the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, it came out before the millennium, and it sort of set this tone for the next 10 years.
Which also I thought was quite great, because then the whole world was fearful that the Matrix would fall apart, because remember Y2K? Mm. We all thought that computers were going to crash.
Yeah, no.
Right? Now thinking back on it, wow, we were dumb.
Yeah.
But, you know, we solved that problem. But now just thinking about it, also one film that also really hit me hard, and this hit me in high school, sorry to go back now.
No.
Is Fight Club, man.
Okay.
I just thought, like, man, Brad Pitt, fuck you.
Yeah.
What a guy.
Yeah.
So just amazing. And then pair him with Ed Norton. I was like, no, man.
Yeah.
This film's incredible.
No, it's lovely. I've gotten into that author.
Oh, yeah?
Chuck Palahniuk.
Cool.
I know. A lot of his stuff is big into this, you don't know it's under the surface.
That's cool.
It's there, and it's really informing our our day-to-day life.
Yeah, it really is.
And how these things are building up. It's a lovely commentary on masculinity.
Cool.
The book's great.
What's the book called?
I mean, this is Fight Club, the book.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, his other stuff is great. He did Choke, Lullaby, Haunted. There's so many books. But Fight Club was one of his earlier books.
Yeah.
There's a couple of books that are these short stories, and they go into these very similar kind of underground groups that do these kind of weird things. There was one, I remember one of the short stories was about really, really wealthy people getting their kicks out of like being homeless people for the night. And it was this similar to kind of Fight Club, where it's like normal people could go into this basement, beat the shit out of each other to get out of their frustrations or feel manly or whatever those kind of strange mental health, you know, sort of cures were happening in Fight Club.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then this was one about how, you know, because when you're homeless, you're kind of invisible. You can do whatever you want. You can do things to each other on the street and you can cause shit. But you're actually like very wealthy. But
yeah,
they do it as like a weird fetish. And
yeah, it's almost like they're craving that freedom.
Yeah, no.
That they believe that they have.
And I just love when these people kind of open your mind to this, you know, this other way of looking at the world.
Yeah.
Super cool. Listen, man, good luck with this film.
Dude, thanks. Yeah.
I hope it's everything that you need it to be.
Yeah. I think it's going to be fun. I've never done a whodunit film.
Are you talking about the one that I wrote
or the one that I'm going to be in?
I was talking about the Root film.
Yes, that's the whodunit film.
That's the whodunit?
It's cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Love me a good whodunit.
Yeah. Listen, my film that I wrote, do you mind if I tell you about
it?
It's super cool. It's not confidential because I think it's rad. A little bit of a backstory. The company that I just did We Will Rock You For, they're the same company that produces Ultra.
So okay.
The techno, you know, the EDM festival. So I had this weird idea back in 2019. I was like, oh man, I went to one of those Ultras and I had the best time. And I was like, whoa, what if we had Harold and Kumar and Eurovision, and they had a little cinematic love child that is about two South African kids that have a dream to play in the first ever Ultra in South Africa.
Okay.
Two DJs.
Okay.
That are struggling in life, struggling artists, but they have this big ass dream that they want to play in the first ever Ultra, and wrote the screenplay. It's now 84 pages and I cannot wait to film it.
And it can be filmed.
And
that's
it's going to be so good, man. That's so achieved. Stupid.
You know
it's
how
funny.
Like right now in this last Formula One season, they've been shooting some of the B-roll and extra footage for the Brad Pitt. There's this Brad Pitt Formula One movie coming.
That's cool.
And so they're getting some shots at these actual Formula Ones. And so, you know, Brad Pitt's rocking up and, you know, going, you know, when they're not actually doing the race, they're shooting this footage because everything's kind of set up.
Yeah.
So it's very achievable for you to be able to try and get that permission.
Yeah, listen, I wish I had Brad Pitt's money, but
no, but you can, if there's a slight way into Ultra, it's very achievable for you to try and film this footage at an Ultra.
Well, listen, I mean,
get the actors in the environment. There's lots of cameras. You could probably even do a punk rock version.
Well, I think what's really cool about the idea is, one, I have a love for cinema, and two, I loved my experience of the festival. So it just made sense to celebrate something that is South African or at least produced by South African people. And I was like, yeah, let's live what we've been preaching. Let's work together to create something sick.
It could be a good film.
Could be.
Yeah, it will
be. All right,
be.
I look forward to hearing your review when we make it. No, it's going to be fun, man. It's going to be so cool.
Listen, lovely. Thank you for your time, man. I appreciate getting to know you.
Yeah, listen, I appreciate it.
And I'll see you down the road. You must come and pop in every now and again, come and say hi, but good luck with everything.
I think next time I'm going to come for a recommendation because I watch too many rom-coms.
Yeah.
And then here's my recommendation. What can I go watch?
Watch The Fall Guy.
The
new Ryan Gosling.
I will.
It's about the love of filmmaking, which you love.
Man.
It's all about being on set.
Yeah.
David Leitch, the director, used to be a stunt double. So it's this beautiful ode to cinema making and movie making. But at the same time, it's this fun action film that takes some twists and turns you don't expect. But at the heart of it, here's the kicker. The heart of it is this beautiful romantic comedy.
You got me sold.
That's its dagger, and it just comes at your heart. And you leave the Fall Guy going, fuck, this is good. Yeah. It's got everything, and it's perfectly balanced. It's great.
That's beautiful.
It's Gosling as funny romantic Gosling, which is the best.
Yeah.
So imagine The Notebook with jokes.
It's so funny.
No.
It's like Crazy Stupid Love.
Yeah, it's that.
I love that guy.
It's that. Yeah. Okay, so 100% you are renting The Fall Guy from us.
100%.
It's happening right now.
100%. We're doing it right now. Run my card. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Didi. Cheers. All right. What a good chat.
Mm.
What a...
Yeah, that was great.
It had a lot to it.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate him sharing as much as he did. And fascinating dude, handsome man.
Mm.
Let's talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, I saw him from the. He caught the corner of my eye while I was dusting off the horror shelf. You know?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But lovely dude. And I just, you know, a lot of the guests on the video store are me pulling in my friends and using it as a chance to actually spend some quality time with friends. But I really do appreciate these moments where it's a person I don't know.
Yeah.
And I get to know them over the course of 40 minutes to an hour. Mm. That's very special. And, you know, he's out there now shooting this Daryl Ruett film.
Oh, he's killing it.
And I hope it works out for him. I hope it's everything that he needs it to be. And what a nice guy.
Mm. Yeah.
All right. So previous episodes are available for you to go straight to. Over on the videostore.co.za. As I said, we've had Karuna, who was also a musical theater performer. We've had lots of other actors on the show. And so, yeah, great to go check out the previous stuff. And then we'll see you again next week, guys.
Yay.
Every Tuesday is our chat behind the counter, where it's a more focused chat on what we're watching and on TV and out in cinemas. And then every Thursday is our guest chat. All right. We'll see you again soon. Thank you for listening and cheers.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.